please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Good morning, campers! Pick up your coffee cup, make a cup of tea, pour yourself a beer. Hair of the dog, it's the Francine Marie Show!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. It's that time again. We have to register because registration is open right now for Pink Sunday. So Coleman, Charlotte, Pink Sunday. This is what we're talking about today. We got some new best friends. It's Tony Lee. She's our navigation and programs manager for Coleman, Charlotte. Also, we have Kendall Bodie. She is our education and outreach coordinator for Coleman, Charlotte. So Team Coleman, Charlotte.
Good morning, Francine.
Took this job. You didn't think, oh, should I buy more pink?
That's correct.
Is there a lot of pink out there?
Right. Yeah. Actually, for my first day, I went and purchased a pink shirt because I really didn't own that much pink. So now it's my color on certain days.
Okay. Got it. Because there's pink tie guys.
That's correct.
Yes. They have to find some pink ties.
They do.
Yes.
Luckily, they're making them for men.
Yes, they do. It's a hot color right now for men.
Yes. So very popular.
We got to find out, do you have a pink suit? Do you have a pink suit?
I do not have a pink suit. I have a pink dress shirt and a pink dress.
Because that reminds me of Easter.
Yeah, exactly. Springtime.
Is Easter. This event around Easter?
I believe it's 2 weeks after Easter Sunday this year.
So we can wear the outfit that we had for
Easter
on Pink Sunday. And the event that we're talking about happens on Sunday, April 26th. And there's no particular church that's having it, right? All churches are
correct.
Having it.
Yeah, so Pink Sunday is a free event to educate and promote breast health awareness, early detection, and address health disparities within the faith communities in Coleman, Charlotte's 13-county service area. So last year, we had 442 churches register and participate throughout our 13-county service area. So Pink Sunday is primarily focused on the African-American and Latina communities, but it is open to all faith organizations.
God, over 400 churches?
Yes. And our goal this year is actually to recruit 500. So we want to increase the number of churches participating in Pink Sunday so that we can get the word out about breast health.
So what's the benefit of coming to Pink Sunday or having your church participate?
So the benefit is to educate the congregation around breast health, particularly the importance of early detection. And for those that lack health insurance, we also would provide information on where they can find resources within their county for free mammograms. And that's part of my role is to, you know, facilitate access to care and screenings.
Free mammograms?
Yes.
Are they hard to find?
So I would say within Mecklenburg and Cabarrus County, there are more resources, but in the more rural settings, there may only be one organization that can provide access to free screenings. But within that organization, we want to make sure that the residents of that county are aware of that resource.
Right, because you still have trucks.
Yes, there are mobile vans through the hospital systems that can go out to these more rural or underserved areas. So, mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw a monkey wrench here. You know, men get breast cancer too.
Yes, that's correct.
So can they get a mammogram?
Yes, they can. And I've known some men to have a mammogram, yes, through reports, yes.
Because it seems like they wouldn't find out till way later.
Sure.
Women are more apt to, I don't know, touch their breasts and examine their breasts.
Sure. Men, you know, it could be at a later stage where things have just kind of gotten worse and there's absolutely no choice. But with all of the talk in the media now with men and breast cancer, they may, you know, be more aware of the signs and symptoms and be more likely to take care of it, you know, in the early stages. So,
got it.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about Pink Sunday. It's happening April the 26th. More African American women are diagnosed with late stage breast cancer compared to other populations. So we have got to make ourselves aware of this, right?
Yes.
But I never hear about what happens after if you're diagnosed later. You know, mm-hmm. We don't even like to hear the word stage
mm-hmm.
four.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it seems like, wow, stage four must be the last.
Yes, that's metastatic breast cancer where the breast cancer has spread to other organs. And so at this point right now for metastatic breast cancer, there are treatments, but there is no cure. So the importance of early detection is if there is a diagnosis of breast cancer is to catch it in stage one or stage two where treatment is more likely to be successful.
Got it.
Yeah.
What if we don't have insurance? That's the big word. Another word, too, insurance, stage four.
Yeah.
We don't even look into our insurance. Will it cover?
Sure. So those that don't have health insurance, we actually, Komen, partners with other organizations in the community to connect people who don't have health insurance to these organizations so that the screenings, whether it be a routine screening or a diagnostic screening, are like at no cost. And then there's also even a couple of programs that will continue with treatment or care should there actually be a breast cancer diagnosis. And even those with insurance, it's important to know, talk to your insurance provider about, is there a copay? Is there coinsurance? A screening mammogram may be covered at 100%, but a diagnostic, you may have to pay 30% of that fee. So it's important to know, even if you are insured, what your coverage plans are.
Yeah, yes. I need to do a show on insurance.
Yes, you really do. Yes, it's important.
It's a very important topic to talk about is insurance, especially with all of the health problems that people are coming into nowadays. Mm-hmm. Insurance is very important to be educated about.
Sure.
Some of the insurance, well, sometimes we work in broadcasting, we work for insurance,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
somebody else in the, our spouse is making most of the money, so
Correct.
We just work for the insurance.
Correct. Can be costly insurance, but at the same time, if you're fortunate enough to have it, definitely use your benefits and check your benefit plan.
And Komen is on our side.
Yes, we are. We are here. And particularly if you don't have health insurance, I can help facilitate access to screenings and diagnostic mammograms.
What's the difference between Susan G. Komen and Komen Charlotte?
So Susan G. Komen is our, our headquarters. And each city or state can have an affiliate. And we are an affiliate of Susan G. Komen headquarters. And so there are certain guidelines that we operate under from Komen headquarters, but we also are our own affiliate as well.
Entity. And you work with other nonprofits as well.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. Komen Charlotte has a community grants program, and a lot of the other Komen affiliates do as well, in which we have organizations that apply for grant funding through Komen Charlotte, and then we decide who, is approved for funding. And then through there, we work with those grantees to help actually do the mammograms or get access to care and treatment for breast cancer. Yes. Yeah.
Do you guys work with any particular hospital or mm-hmm. medical group or?
So at least in Mecklenburg and Cabarrus County, we work with Novant and Atrium Health for sure. And then we can link people to other healthcare systems in other counties as well. Yes.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Right now we can register. We can go register. I need y'all to do it now. So we can actually go to KomenCharlotte.org.
Yes.
We need to do that kind of soon.
Yeah.
April will be here.
That's true.
The sun will be shining when we get out of work.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be warm.
Warm and sunny.
That's
and we'll
right.
get out of this fog and depression.
Yeah. So if we would like to have the churches register by Friday, March 13th. And that just helps us to ensure the availability of the breast health materials and be able to, coordinate and distribute them to the churches ahead of time.
Got it.
We'll okay. also be doing a church ambassador training.
Yes. So on March 28th, we will be having a church ambassador training that everyone will have a church ambassador for their church and they'll be able to come in. It's going to be at Hickory Grove Public Library and we'll be able to help give them some ideas, facilitate Pink Sunday at their church, as well as they would have the option to pick up their breast health resources that day instead of going out to their county's local pickup location or the Komen office at a later date.
That makes so much sense because you guys can't be at 500 churches.
No, that's correct. Yes, we need all the assistance we can get from the church ambassadors and the county chairs. Yes.
How young can you be to be a church ambassador? Because I'm thinking this might be good for someone who's 18, 19, 20,
sure.
25 years old.
Preparing
sure.
for college, young professionals. Yeah, anyone can do it. Anyone from their church can go through and register and plan Pink Sunday.
Yeah.
Got it. All right.
Yeah.
So here's a scenario. All right. I'm walking up with my pink dress on. It's Pink Sunday. I'm going to the church of my choice. Right.
Yeah.
And there's Pink Sunday. There's the banner. Right.
Yes.
I can see the banner now. What do I say? What do we do?
Sure. So if it's your first time experiencing a Pink Sunday event, you may just want to ask the church ambassador or the health and wellness coordinator, you know, what is this about? And from there, they can provide you with the breast health materials, and they may actually have a speaker who's going to address the congregation. Sometimes it's a breast cancer survivor or a healthcare professional or someone who may have been touched in some way by breast cancer, speak to the congregation and kind of speak about their why they're involved with Pink Sunday. Or the congregation or the church may have like a pink lemonade and cupcakes afterwards to discuss, or they might want an education table set up where someone can come by and pick up the breast health materials. So there's different ways that they can celebrate. And of course, yes, wear pink, wear the big hats, pink bows as well. They can decorate the pews.
Yes,
with
we
pink
have
bows.
We have pink bows that we sell through Komen Charlotte that they have the option of purchasing. They'll be at our ambassador trainings, and they can also contact the office for pink bows. All of the money that we get goes back to the missions department within Komen Charlotte.
Got it. So the money raised here stays here?
Correct. 75% of the net proceeds through Komen Charlotte remains local, and 25% goes into research.
And we've got some good, the triangle, right? We've got some good researchers here, right, in North Carolina.
Correct. Yes, there is another affiliate in North Carolina, the North Carolina Triangle to the Coast, and it covers 29 counties around the Raleigh eastern portion of North Carolina, and then Komen Charlotte covers the 13 county service area around the metropolitan Charlotte area.
Y'all do a lot.
Yes.
How many in the office?
So we believe we have 9 staff.
There's yes. 9 of us yes. right now.
Yes. Yes.
Somebody's missing. I'm glad you guys took the time to come by and educate.
Yes.
Because how else are you going to educate masses of
Correct.
People?
Correct.
Because advertising costs a lot.
True.
Right?
Yes. For nonprofits, yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
You
yes.
can't hire 500 folks to go out to 500 places.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you having us on and being able to help us promote Pink Sunday and get the word out.
Yes, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be able to talk about Pink Sunday and be able to educate women and get one step closer to our bold goal.
One step closer, our new best friends, Tony Lee, our Navigation and Programs Manager, and also Kendall Bodie, our Education and Outreach Coordinator with Komen Charlotte.
Yay! Thank you, Francine.
You're welcome. Go right now. Register. KomenCharlotte.org. Churches. Register. Yeah.
This is Natalie. I know you've been wondering who this voice is. I have a face for radio, and I'm the voice of the Francine Marie Show.
Oh, dear.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action. Look how he makes eye contact with his person. That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Sweet strawberry icing. You're in Goodwill, and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings, and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing. The Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Well, joining us today is our documentarian. It's Steve Crump. His new documentary is called Franklin McCain, Flashbacks and Observations of a Civil Rights Trailblazer. It's the new documentary.
I'm here.
You're here.
I am. It's good to be here. It's good. It's been a long time since we've done this.
Well, you look fabulous, darling.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a long road.
How many documentaries? This should be trivia. How many documentaries have you produced and hosted?
Over 20, I think. I've never really counted them.
Really? Because I asked you before, what was your best one? Your baby, your best one?
I think Muhammad Ali is probably, well, since it's hometown, Louisville, the Ali piece will probably be the one that I cradle onto the most.
So let's get into it. The amazing Franklin McCain is what the new documentary is all about.
Dear man, friend, mentor, individual of extreme courage and integrity, and accomplished so much as a person who broke the glass ceiling as a teenager. Keep in mind, Frank, as I call him, was kind of the ringleader at North Carolina A&T, and we're dealing with the 60th anniversary on February 1st of this year, because it was February 1st, 1960, that he and three other students sat down at the Greensboro Woolworths and asked for service, were refused because they didn't serve black people. And that catapulted a movement that engulfed much of the entire South.
I think this is a good time to pause and let our audience hear a little bit of your documentary about Franklin back in 1941, and it gives me a chance to play some Jubilees, a singing group back in 1941.
America's military forces entered World War II, the very same year Franklin Eugene McCain was born in Union County, North Carolina during 1941. 18 years later, when Fidel Castro ascended to power in Cuba during 1959, McCain enrolled at Greensboro's North Carolina A&T University. On this campus, he was in search of a new kind of power that altered history and changed our country.
I could have expended all that energy, all that pain, you know, for something else.
His pain, deeply rooted in principle and conviction, because on February 1st, 1960, Franklin McCain, along with David Richmond, Joseph McNeil, and Ezell Blair, caused the soil to shake by being among those successfully ushering in the nation's sit-in movement.
It doesn't take a lot of people to do whatever it is that people thought was impossible.
Taking on long shot odds rocked this downtown Woolworths and fueled the volatile climate, hurling emotions to the brink. This challenge meant fighting the wrath brought on by decades of Jim Crow rule that were often humiliating, blatant, and downright heinous.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. You know, back then we didn't have social media, no emails, no faxes, no nothing like that to galvanize people.
To use a line from some of the civil rights activists I interviewed over the years, they just put their bodies in the way.
You got to sit down to stand up, right?
You do. And I think that what they did demonstrated the power that each individual has. I mean, when you look at the principles and the tenets of nonviolence, and when you look at the way they presented themselves, they weren't there in baggy clothes and, you know, stuff showing their underwear and being disrespectful. They were there in shirts and ties. They were dressed in an appropriate manner, along with the followers that came days later, that at least addressed a level of attention to get the decision makers to take them seriously. No, it didn't happen overnight. But at the same time, a lot of the people that perhaps could own the narrative and that in many ways could impact change saw these college kids were serious.
If you look online and you're like, oh, I want to Google civil rights movement, you know, they only put it between, what, 1959 to 1969. It's still going on.
It is. I think that we kind of learned that during this year's MLK holiday. The focus has changed. It's not just a black and white issue anymore. I mean, I think, you know, the reality is you're dealing with issues of immigration. You're dealing with issues of socioeconomic status. I happened to read a quote recently from Dr. Martin Luther King. While he championed nonviolence, he also said in the late 60s before he died that the reason that you were having these riots and disturbances from city to city in that decade is because so many of the people that were taking to the streets were not among the voices that were being heard. And that struck me as profound.
Here's a clip from your documentary that really speaks volumes. Take a listen.
When the sit-in started in Greensboro on February the 1st, 1960, that brought joy and happiness to many of us. There were people saying, by sitting down, they're standing up for the best of America.
Well, I think without the work of Frank and those other students that joined him, you don't get a Barack Obama. You don't get a voting rights. You don't get Thurgood Marshall appointed to the Supreme Court. All of the kinds of things that helped the progressive forward movement that happened in this country through blood, sweat, and tears of the 60s, that door was pried open by Franklin McCain.
That clip from the documentary, Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations, will air on WBTV February the 21st at 7 p.m., and the John Lewis Reflections of a Sit-In Pioneer will air February 22nd at 7:30 p.m. on Bounce. I know a lot of people are patting you on your back and thanking you for doing this documentary. You know, a lot of our great-grandparents didn't have TVs to see this going on.
No, and a lot of TV stations, primarily in the South, didn't carry it. What I found, things that would be headline, front page, Charlotte Observer were buried, page 20, page 29, you know, especially in newspapers in the South. There were TV station general managers in a lot of Southern cities calling the networks in New York saying, we're not going to air that program. We're not going to allow, you know, our station to be hijacked by the views of people involved in civil rights. Ultimately, they did, you know, but, you know, the reality is there were people even in, you know, the profession of media that wanted to control the narrative of segregation.
I'm so grateful that you sent me some clips from the documentary, and I'm going to play one now of a newsman talking about what did happen in Greensboro.
The walkthrough by the hundreds and then thousands of young Negroes has made an impression. But their call for a general boycott has been unheard or unheeded by the many Negroes in Greensboro.
What Franklin McCain and the A&T students kicked off created an unforeseen domino effect.
But I can tell you in all honesty, it does not feel just like yesterday.
Dr. Esther Terry was among those who took a seat at the Woolworths. She graduated from Greensboro's all-women's Bennett College, and decades later became the school's president.
We were on a mission that the Bennett girls who were there in with me had a sense of determination. We knew that we were doing something important.
I think that Franklin McCain and the folks at A&T tapped into the power of HBCUs, the historically black colleges that are thick on the ground in North Carolina, from NC Central to A&T, Bennett College, Johnson C. Smith University.
I don't think we got to the point where we were thinking that, well, when we do this, it's going to be High Point, North Carolina tomorrow, and Danville, Virginia the next day, and Fayetteville the next day, and Winston-Salem the next day. I don't think we thought that way at all.
Telling headlines magnify the response from city to city, and the highly charged and deeply emotional demonstrations even landed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in an Atlanta jail cell.
And they were demonstrating that Black Lives Matter by the stand that they took. And they were forcing not only America to come to terms with that, they were forcing the world to come to terms with it.
I love that piece. Well, if you're just out tuning in, Steve Crump is here. Yeah, he's got a new documentary, and you've been listening to a little bit of it. Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations of a Civil Rights Trailblazer. Now, we can RSVP if we want to see this at the Gantt Center. You got to write this down, though. It's RSVP at GantCenter.org, and Gantt is with two T's. You can sit home and watch this as well. Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations airs on WBTV. That's going to be February the 21st at 7 p.m., or you can find it the very next day, February 22nd. John Lewis Reflections of a Sit-In Pioneer airs February 22nd at 7:30 p.m.
And Franklin McCain airs right before that at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So we have two nights of Franklin McCain on two different channels.
Which is really good. Thank you, WBTV. And you, because I know it took more than one meeting to say, I want to air this. I want to do this.
We collaborated, and they got it. They got it on the first presentation.
So if I can ask you this.
Sure.
When was the very first documentary? And has the narrative changed?
The very first documentary, just to give you a little context, as an undergraduate student at my college alma mater of Eastern Kentucky University, for one thing, my transcript reads like a bad credit report. I probably have like a 300. I didn't get my first 2.0 GPA until my senior year, like right before graduation. And yes, I did graduate. And, you know, the reality of that, I hated film studies. I despised film studies. I was a disc jockey. I was a TV news person, just so embroiled in the performance side of the industry. But I kind of go back to something that happened to me in high school in long form reporting stuff where, you know, you try to get to a network. You know, it's like you don't have any long form reporting. You don't have any overseas experience, you know, and you try to find the building blocks, per se, that make you marketable. 1994, that was the first documentary. I lost, I think of it in hindsight, I lost my mind. I went to South Africa with a camera. I spent 2 weeks right after Mandela became president. I made two trips to South Africa inside of 3 months. I went over with Governor Hunt. He was the very first governor to sign a trade agreement with the South African government that involved the old First Union Bank and Nedbank of South Africa. And what a lot of people don't realize is there are a number of stock exchanges in Africa, Ghana and South Africa being two of them. I've been to both of them. And, you know, the first documentary, we did a half-hour special that ran on public television, and we condensed it to a three-part series, which actually won me my first Emmy. That was the beginning, and the reason why I went, because I was in a third world studies course my last year of high school, and we were studying apartheid. And it was before we knew the names Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu, and I believe Mandela was still in jail in Robben Island while all that was happening. But the reality, as you look at the numbers in the aggregate, you had 20 million people living in South Africa, 16 million blacks, controlled by 4 million whites. And I was the only African-American in that class at the time, and I knew in my heart of hearts I would be there one day. And so it was taking a camcorder and having worked in some smaller markets, I kind of knew my way around a camera. I mean, not that I'm a great shooter, because I'm not, but I took enough pictures to be able to pull it off.
And that's key. Well, you got to have the eye.
You know, as we say in both radio and TV, we'll fix it in post. So we did a lot of fixing in post.
How many times have you been to Greensboro, to the museum?
Oh, gosh. Many. You know, I was there 10 years before it got off the ground. I was there when they were building and constructing it. I was there for the actual opening. I've been there to watch a film series. I've been to that old Woolworths many times.
It took many tries for African-Americans to sit and to get served.
The interesting thing is what they achieved and what they accomplished, that went on a little bit longer than it did in other places. Charlotte was integrated like a month or so before. Nashville, speaking of John Lewis, he was involved in, you know, the situation in Nashville. And they took the cue from Greensboro. Took the cue from Franklin. And the reality is, the sit-ins in Greensboro went from February to July. But by May, they were already integrating their counters in Nashville.
The documentary that Steve Crump has produced and hosted, it's Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations of a Civil Rights Trailblazer. Did he always have the nickname as a trailblazer?
No. I remember the first time that I ever heard Franklin speak. I'd been in town for maybe a year, and he was speaking at Biddle Hall at Johnson C. Smith University. And he talked about the power of movements. And, you know, he talked about what the Ford did in Greensboro and how that spread across the South and got lost, changed, and all that. But he centered his conversation on the son of a carpenter that was able to put together 12 of his friends, and we see what that movement has done. You have churches all over the world now. He was talking about Jesus. So he very clearly described the power of one and what one individual can do to improve the human condition. Franklin passed away in 2014. And, you know, I had interviews with Franklin going back 12, 13, 14 years. And I said, on the 60th anniversary, what if we hit the recycle button? And because there was a lot of good stuff that never aired that ended up on the cutting room floor. You know, and we pulled some sound bites from some of the early pieces. But I remember one of the first projects I did that involved Franklin. It was called Lessons from the Lunch Counter. And he said, when I sat down, he says, there was some fear and some trepidation. And I was worried that I would end up in jail for a very long time or come back home in a pinewood box. And that was the kind of fear that he had. But he also talked about how there was just this level of validation, you know, and he said, if I had not done that, I would have missed out on so much of what life had to offer.
McCain went on to earn a degree in chemistry and biology and to enjoy nearly 35-year career as a chemist and sales representative. But he still remained...
He worked for Celanese here in Charlotte.
And still remained in the civil rights movements.
Yeah. You know, Frank was huge beyond that. I mean, even in all the, you know, the hiccups and ups and downs that was happening with that museum over the years, he felt a sense of obligation and duty. And, you know, I remember him telling me, he says, that museum is my conscience. And so he felt a sense of responsibility. But not only that, you know, he was very responsible with the legal defense fund of the NAACP. And so he and his late wife, Betty, an amazing couple. She helped out. She was in school at the all-women's Bennett College, and the women from Bennett backed up the folks from A&T. It wasn't a one-trick pony. They were a team. I mean, I'd been at their home when they were getting calls and people making donations to the Legal Defense Fund, you know, and they would do their annual dinner. And that involved his longtime friend, the late Julius Chambers, who was the president of North Carolina Central. So Frank, even in his role as a trustee with the North Carolina Board of Governors for Colleges, made sure that minority students were afforded opportunities in graduate programs in law schools and dental schools and in medical school. He never gave up the fight.
Can you tell us, from watching the preview of the documentary, thank you for letting me do that.
I had a great voice on what we call the billboards.
Ah. I wonder who it was.
You may have a career in television, young lady.
I might have a, after all these years, I might have a career in television. SNCC meetings.
Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Tell folks about the SNCC meetings.
SNCC is a very powerful force. They're coming up on their 60th anniversary. April 1960, Shaw University, Raleigh, North Carolina. Shaw is a historically black college. And you had these college students from all over the country that came and assembled. One of my good friends who just passed away, Charles Jones, who's in the McCain piece and the John Lewis piece, was one of the participants in that. At the top of the show, you were talking about J.L. Nobale and the Friendship Nine. Well, not only was it the Friendship Nine, there were four members of SNCC that came to back them up, and they got tossed in the clink as well for the 30 days on a chain gang. There were two women that did not have to do the time in jail, Diane Nash, who became very famous in the movement, and Ruby Doris Smith. I've interviewed Diane Nash, and she was very resolute about the position that she took during that episode. You know, SNCC was out in front on a lot of issues, even in the Selma to Montgomery march. As a result of Bloody Sunday, that, you know, SNCC was there, Jim Bevel, and they got the assistance of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. King, Andrew Young. And, you know, I mean, there were times that there were skirmishes on how they got along, but also at the same time, they all wanted the same thing in the endgame strategy, so they learned to make nice.
There's something to learn from that generation.
Oh, is there ever?
You know, they...
And we're losing them.
Yeah. They created the words sustainability.
Absolutely.
They really did. I know a couple that went to HBCUs and now they're pretty much retired. But when you talk to someone who married someone from Bennett,
right,
those couples loved each other, stayed together, and fought the civil rights movement situation, had babies, raised their kids, and had careers.
And I think that in some ways, the point that you make is well taken from the perspective of maybe going back then to the 50s and the 60s when they were attending those HBCUs, the fight that they were in, the struggles that they endured, perhaps in some regards, became the tie that binds, you know? I mean, I think you kind of get back to the whole core values of what it is that makes a couple a great couple.
He's got core values. That's our guest. You know his voice. It's Steve Crump, our documentarian.
A little weak voice, but we're okay. We're getting back. We're getting better.
See, I'll get into TV and you're going to get into voiceovers and radio.
No,
how about that?
I was horrible at voiceovers and doing production work and radio. I could do a DJ show, but I could not read a commercial to save my life.
All right. We need to put Steve on the air for at least a day. And would you want to do mornings?
I've done mornings. And I've done sign-off, where I had to sign off the transmitter at midnight, a 1,000-watt station. The difference now would be I learned how to cue records back in the day. There are no turntables. I'd have to go automated or, you know, I used to hit cart machines. And that was the joy and the beauty of all of it, because in addition to being the entertainer, you were also the engineer. If you had to run your own board, play your own spots, hit the jingles, make the commercial breaks, like we ran a clock at 7, 14, and 21 for the first half hour, hit the news block, you know, when they're carrying network news, the tone. So great memories, though.
The DJ I remember the most when we were at the Kiss 95.1 station on Kings and Third was a guy named Drew Parham. He would come in, and it was like he was on fire. He would grab the carts with one toe. He would start
punch
the reel to reel with one finger. He would be on the mic.
And then you try to record what's known as an air check, too, in the middle of all of that. And how do you time the records to make the break? You know, I mean, you know, there was the flexibility of us picking our own music back in the day. Now, where'd you grow up?
Kansas City, Missouri, where they make real barbecue.
Okay, all right. I'm a Gates person.
Oh, yes. We do have that in common.
Yeah. I never really did Arthur Bryant, but gosh, I love Gates and Red Pop.
Okay. Red Pop. We used to call it pop. People call it soda here.
I know.
We call it the show. And people
we call it pop back home in Kentucky. Yeah.
But you got some good barbecue, right?
Yeah. Sorry. In Owensboro. And the thing is really different. And they don't do that here. But in Owensboro, they do barbecue lamb. Baby lamb is called mutton.
Oh, yes.
And mutton ribs are amazing. There's a place called Old Hickory, and they do mutton ribs. I remember interviewing Daryl Waltrip once, and Daryl and his brother Michael are both from Owensboro. My closest aunt was from there, it's Davis County. And I said, Daryl, and this was at a dinner, some NASCAR dinner thing. And I said, I know they're serving steaks tonight, but wouldn't you like to have some mutton from the moonlight? And he looked at me and said, son. So, yeah.
Mutton and moonshine.
Now, Moonlight is the restaurant. It's called Moonlight Barbecue.
But it reminded me of moonshine, and I like moonshine.
Okay.
We'll have to have a shot. I should have some for you. We're going over this documentary that our Steve Crump, our fabulous Steve Crump, our documentarian, made. So how long did it take? So if you had 10 years, let's say 10 years of footage of Franklin McCain, if not more, how did you wheedle it down to, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah, 26 for a TV half hour. There's a close friend of mine that's on the assignment desk at another station in town, and we're about the same age. She said to me, it's like, Steve, we have entered the generation of cut-and-paste producing. And there is a site that I use where I was able to upload those interviews and get a transcript complete with time code. So I was able to do the reads, because before that, I was like literally transcribing for hours on end, which is tedious, it's boring, it's frustrating. And, you know, you're paying 10 cents a minute, so an hour interview will cost you $6. And, you know, and I'm just like reading this stuff. It's like, okay, I like this soundbite, I like that soundbite. And you can even play it back and watch it as you're reading. So I could just instantly cue, yes, not digital, the tapes, which we later digitized, to get the correct sound bites and the information. So, you know, this one probably took 6 months.
6 months. So you go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it.
And I have the laptop on the nightstand. So if I wake up at 2 a.m,
I got an idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you wake Kathy up when you have these bright ideas, or you let her sleep?
I think Kathy can be a light sleeper, but she's so used to it by now. And, you know, this kind of lets me do my thing.
Yeah, when you marry a news guy, you know?
Oh, she's seen it. She has seen it.
What do you think was more pivotal? It was all pivotal when it comes to civil rights. 1963 March on Washington.
It's been a continuum. In the 40s, you had Tuskegee Airmen. You had the Black paratroopers that did a piece on, in fact, I was in Kansas City. That's why I was there. The Triple Nickels. By the time we get to the 50s, we had Rosa Parks. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention another project we had done. Sarah Mae Fleming, who did what Rosa Parks did 17 months before. And when the Parks case in front of the Supreme Court was called Bowder versus Gale. But in their findings, in the federal court's findings, they cited the South Carolina case first in rendering a decision in the Parks case. So the Palmetto State clearly was first in that, you know, more so. I mean, you know, it was handled by the NAACP and some other organizations. But the reality is it came before Montgomery. Montgomery just got the publicity and had the infrastructure.
I think maybe now we have less families that own media. I think there's like 6 or 7 families that own media now. I don't know. We had a lot of mom and pop news organizations, newspapers.
And they're struggling.
Yeah.
They're struggling. The game has changed. I mean, I look at some of these newspapers I was doing research from, and in some of their weekly papers, daily, Monday through Friday, Saturday, not including Sunday, they do 80, 90 pages during the week. And now, you know, you get some local papers, you're lucky if you get 20 pages. So part of it has been the evolution of the internet, social, digital, and people want it now, you know, rather than waiting to get it on their front doorstep. You can get it on your phone.
Speaking of news, speaking of Black History Month, I don't know if they're still assigned to do reports. What 3 or 4 names would you throw out to challenge a child to do a report on or find out about it? Just find out about it. I took my daughter to a play this past weekend, a Billie Holiday play.
Mm-hmm.
She loved it.
Strange Fruit. I've been invited. I haven't seen it yet.
And she's She's like, I don't know why I didn't know about this before. Right? So
there is an interesting connection with Billie Holiday and the great Charlotte artist Romare Bearden. You know, in fact, Bearden had spent some time living in Baltimore. And when I did one of my Bearden projects, there is a glass mural of Billie Holiday in one of the rail stations in Baltimore. And it was Italian Venetian glass. And it is amazing.
She made a mark.
Did she ever?
She made a mark. I think she was 44 when she
died very, very young.
Any other folks that you would say, you know what? Look up this guy. Look up this gal. Look.
You know, if you were talking, and I said this in a speech a few weeks ago, we get swept up a lot of times in the big names, you know, the Malcolm X's, the Martin Luther King's and all that. But when you look around what I call our backyard, where you had a heroine like a Dorothy Counts, or you had somebody like Charles Jones, who I've mentioned, or even a Frank, they were all right here in Charlotte. And the name that has gotten a lot of traction, and there was a recent wonderful piece on him, and I knew who he was early on, but Dory Miller, who was the African-American who had no training when they bombed Pearl Harbor because he was relegated to subservient jobs, but he runs up on the deck and started shooting at those Japanese warplanes with a 50 caliber gun. Apparently, Cuba Gooding Jr. played the role of Dory Miller in the movie Pearl Harbor. Cuba's role is based on a true story, and they are now building aircraft carrier and naming it after Dory Miller.
Have you been to Washington, D.C., to the museum?
That was our first anniversary.
Aww.
And they're, true story, when you go into the cafeteria, I remember I had shrimp and grits that were there, which is fine. And it was good. I mean, I think, oh boy, here's somebody else. Here we are. Another. Yeah, shrimp and grits, whatever. But on the back wall, there is a mural. And guess whose picture is on that mural? Franklin McCain. You go to the museum, whose picture shows up in D.C. at the museum in at least two, three places. Frank and the Greensboro Four. The reach was long, very long.
That museum didn't miss a beat.
Well, you had George Clinton's mothership on the top floor next to Chuck Berry's Cadillac.
Where can we find you, I guess, making documentaries? Are you going to be doing some more? All that footage you have, at least I know now you can get it transcribed.
Yeah, we got plans, you know, depending on my health and my strength, you know, and we got a couple of other things lined up. But it's been cathartic. It's been therapeutic. It's been strengthening. And it's been very introspective.
I'm not sure if I can say you were always sharp, but you're sharp just as. Like you didn't miss a beat when you popped back in. When you popped your head back in and said, I'm back.
God is good. Having been diagnosed with cancer on July 21st, 2018, and, you know, the fact that I came very close to dying. I was in the hospital for 51 days and was on a ventilator, dialysis, feeding tube, and part of my right lung had become infected and collapsed all at the same time. It's God's grace, mercy, forgiveness, and that incredible wife of mine has gotten me through this.
Many doctors will come up to the loved one and say, well, you know, his quality of life is not there. So it's almost like they need the bed.
Sometimes they do. And I remember the morning of the diagnosis. After the diagnosis a year and a half ago, they even mentioned hospice as a possibility for me. Hospice and palliative care. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, you know, the abridged version is I go back in for treatment. They insert the chemo port, and that became infected, and that brought on the MRSA. And so, you know, we've survived and we've endured.
I know you've got lots of friends in the biz, out of the biz, so you probably got lots of cards.
Oh, gosh, people sending cards to the station, people sending cards to our home. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for so much. I'm grateful for my friends. I'm grateful for the prayers. And I'm very, very grateful for the outreach of the public and people like you.
So you got some more documentaries in you.
We're not done.
We're not done. We got to have a Steve Crump Museum. What would that, okay, so what would that look like? I know I got to let you go.
It would be a pack rat museum.
It would have reel to reel over here.
Oh, yeah. Carts. 16 millimeter film. You know, some I got to get transferred. There's a piece I did when I was a college student, and I interviewed Robert Conrad. And it was when he's doing the Duracell campaign. And, you know, I said, Mr. Conrad, I got one more question for you, or request, however I phrased it. And I reached in my pocket and I pulled out a Duracell battery and I said, knock it off, I dare you. And that's the way we ended the interview.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the, well, I guess I asked you this before, but maybe you can talk about it in this interview. The most exciting, exhilarating interview that you've done.
Easy.
I think.
Easy.
I was, okay, see if I got it right. Okay. Muhammad Ali.
No, did not interview Ali for the project. The most profound, exhilarating interview for me happened in the Cherry community in 1997, and it was when I interviewed Mother Teresa for a news story. And me being fifth generation Roman Catholic, that was very, very special. And she held my hand, and there's this ritual in the Catholic Church where we say, do this in memory of me. And she grabbed each finger, and it's like, do this in memory of me, the five fingers, and balled up my hand. Now she's been canonized, and she is St. Teresa of Calcutta. How many people can say that they interviewed a saint and even held her hand? Interviewed Paul McCartney. I've interviewed, I guess, three presidents, you know. But no, nothing will top the experience of a Mother Teresa.
I thought you were going to say Oprah was up there with her.
Oprah's interviewed Oprah. When you look at the work this woman did and the lives that she impacted and still impacts, you know, that to me is very, very rich and very, very large.
We need to come out and see this documentary. We can do that in person. We can do it on TV. Are you the type who wants to come out February the 5th? It's at 7 p.m. at the Gantt Center. You can RSVP by emailing rsvp at Gantt, that's two T's, center.org. So that's rsvp at gantcenter.org. You can watch it on your television February the 21st at 7 p.m. Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations, WBTV. Now, the 22nd,
next
we can
day,
watch
yeah.
two of them. We can watch John Lewis Reflections of a Sit-In Pioneer at 7:30, but right before
that. And there are plans to put the John Lewis piece and Franklin's piece back-to-back during Black History Month in February.
That's good.
We're still just looking for the right time slot.
Got it. So we got WBTV, and then we have Bounce.
Which is a BTV channel.
Yeah.
3.2. 1255 on Spectrum.
All right. This is going to be a good one, like all of them. It's Franklin McCain Flashbacks and Observations of a Civil Rights Trailblazer. I want to thank our guest today. It is Mr. Steve Crump.
It's always good being with you, Francine.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, you know what you can do? You can say, thank you for joining us. Join us back next weekend. So you can do your show host thing. How about that?
Do I get to put my hand up on my ear? I got my eyeball on your earlobe, honey. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, your 1 hour public talk radio is up. I have had a delightful time today. Hopefully you've learned something. I am your hostess of the mostest, Francine Marie. Join me next weekend, same time, same station. Until we meet, darling, I need you and you and you to have a good week. Bye-bye, everybody.
I was born by the river in a little tent, and oh, just like that river I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a
change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
Thank you for joining us for the Francine Marie Show, where we address issues concerning you and your family.
That's all for now. See you next week.
To die. So I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.